Caught Offside presents a World Cup group preview.
They believe they're going to win the World Cup.
With Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney, the World Cup group previews roll on. What's up, brother?
Group C already.
Here we are. Group C coming at you.
Interesting group.
Yeah, I'm excited about this one because there are some people who believe that the possible World Cup winner could be within this group.
Plenty of people, and with good reason, which we will get to. I have a question for you.
Oh, wow, this is rare.
I'm holding your feet to the fire on this one.
All right.
I'm holding you accountable, as I always do. Why are we not doing a help a fan, the people have asked, and I think we need to address it.
How honest are we being?
I think we should be fairly honest.
I'm a little worried that to do
the format we use for the Premier League would lead us down a road of country stereotypes.
Yeah, which I'm a little uncomfortable with.
Which I don't feel great about doing.
Right.
Now,
have you seen a clamor for this? Because on my Twitter timeline, I have not.
I have seen a few people ask.
All right.
What are we doing it is the main question. I have a proposal. If I come to you with a small, short questionnaire, which would be stereotypy.
Do you have even a sample in your head of what you're thinking?
Did you enjoy... We'll say, for example, at the last World Cup, did you enjoy Costa Rica more than you enjoyed, we'll say, a powerhouse team?
Okay.
And if you do that, it can lead you towards maybe...
An underdog versus a...
Now, equally, you could just say, I want to support Costa Rica.
Yeah.
You see my problem
here? No, very difficult.
The way we talk about Newcastle and the working class, shipbuilding and all sorts of things,
right,
is easier to do... In that context, then, when we get into nations that me and you haven't even visited, we may lean too much on stereotypes.
Well, I'll tell you what.
And I don't like that.
I'll tell you what. With our Premier League Help of Fans, I have, in the past, gone home. I've made it mine. I've come up with the questions, and I've released them. How about you take this home, and you make this yours, and we'll see what you come up with.
Right. Okay. So I shall present it to you, and we'll start it from next week. There's plenty of time.
Maybe. We don't make any promises.
No, if it's something that works, if I can come up with a short formula that works and that is not...
Here's the only issue I have. Well, you know what? Yeah, you're right. If you can make it work, it could work. The thing with Premier League Help a Fan, the reason that it works is because it's predominantly for American fans here in the United States, where your geographic location or your heritage, it has no bearing whatsoever. Like every single person that we assign a Help a Fan international team to, they do already have an international team. So we would really only be giving them this for this one tournament.
Right.
Then it ends. The tournament ends and you go back to being an American fan. This is for American fans and I guess I'd say Italian fans. I guess it could be anybody that doesn't have a team in the World Cup, that doesn't have a dog in the fight. But
all right, let me work on that and I'll try and present a document to you that is acceptable. And if so, we will push forward.
Okay. Are you ready to start this group preview?
Absolutely.
Group C. Now, for the uninitiated who may have missed groups A or B, or those who missed our World Cup previews back in 2014, what we try to do to give you a taste of each country's culture is come in with what is currently the number one song in that nation on some chart somewhere. Some of those are Billboard charts. Some of those are sham Spotify charts. We've had some people who have expressed some disappointment with the method that we've used to find songs, and I can tell you that I can only go with what I have at hand.
Yeah.
Some of these are really hard to find.
It's quite obscure, and the chart has changed around the world, guys. It's downloads now, it's clicks on YouTube, it's very different.
But I can tell you what was not hard to find, and that was the chart for France, because they use the Billboard charts.
As they should.
And they do. So we go into it now with France. This is Metra GIMS with La Meme.
Si je vous gêne, bah c'est la même. Si je vous gêne, bah c'est la même.
Hey,
I've never been to France. It's probably on my list, a short list of countries that I have not been to that I would like to one day get to.
It's beautiful. I think you'd love it. And so historical as well, which I know is right down your road. But can I just say, that reminds me a little bit of the French 1998 official World Cup song.
Oh, really?
Which was, Allez la France, oh, c'est maintenant que je mets. Allez la France.
I don't think that sounds like what we just played at all. I happen to really like whatever that song was. I feel like, you know, this, I enjoy the song. So the people who it bothers, you know what? To quote a guy who works here at ESPN New York, Michael Kay, go take a walk. All right? It's fun.
People,
I like hearing
most
it.
People love it, so don't worry about that.
All right. Let's get into France now. We've got a bunch of questions, and we always branch off and get into other elements of these teams. Why are you laughing already?
Sorry. Keep going.
All right. Well, I was going to start out with what we typically start with, and that is the key player or players that you think could be a driving force in whatever success or lack thereof that these countries are going to experience.
Yeah, I mean, these are pretty obvious to anyone. I've tried to pick some that are a little bit different. They won't be that much different. Griezmann, Kylian Mbappe, N'Golo Kante, Olivier Giroud, Steven Nzonzi.
So now you're just going to name the roster.
Steven Nzonzi. Okay. Those are guys who I've narrowed it down to, having watched them play in my beloved Republic of Ireland recently.
Can I focus on one of those guys in particular that you mentioned?
Please do.
Who I pointed out for mine? I honed in on N'Golo Kante, mainly because I feel like, quite frankly, whatever team he's on, he's the answer to that question. Like, he would be the X factor if we were talking about Chelsea or if we were talking about Leicester City before that. And for me, it all goes back to this one reason of something that Claudio Ranieri that said this about him from his time with Leicester, that when you're playing with N'Golo Kante, it's like you're playing with an extra man on the field at all times because of everything that he contributes in both attack and defense. He runs more than anybody on the pitch. He covers more ground than anybody on the pitch, and he can play in just as effective pass as anybody on the pitch. So, for me, he will kind of be the driving force between how well they are able to defend, how well they're able to punch forward and attack. If he can link up the midfield with the attack, I just feel like he's kind of the key that can unlock all of this. And I think his role maybe becomes even that much more important. Not that he's an ultra-creative player like a Dimitri Payet, but maybe he'll be asked to do a little more of that with Payet not there.
I don't think that'll be the case at all.
Right.
I think him screening and winning the ball back and launching attacks, being the launch pad for attacks, is what he'll do. I've gone with Antoine Griezmann as the X factor, because if you look at the last European Championship games against Romania, games against Albania, and even recently when I saw them play a friendly against Ireland, Ireland were compact and defensively sound, and Griezmann wasn't on the pitch. Now, France found a way to get through, but there's going to be teams who will not have the ball, will not see the ball against this French side. They're going to be deep lying. You're going to need that creative ability that Griezmann has, not just to score goals himself, but to set other people up. I think he's absolutely key. He is their most important player for this French team. And I see a lot of teams, particularly in this group, sitting back, trying to absorb French pressure. It could be a frustrating... There could be a lot of frustration for French fans watching this, and I think he's absolutely himself, Kylian Mbappe in particular.
Yeah. You talk about the creative element for France. France, it's funny, JJ, they always, it seems like at every international tournament or maybe at World Cups, for whatever reason, controversy follows them. The only one that I could see so far is what's happened with Adrien Rabiot, who was not included on the squad.
Yeah.
He was asked by Didier Deschamps to be a member of the, I guess, squad in waiting should someone get hurt.
Yeah, the standby list.
And he basically said, no, not doing it. You can
thus,
just
effectively,
take me off that.
He can forget it as long as Deschamps is manager.
Right. Now, the way he acted, maybe it was petulant, but does he have any point where you, like, Thomas Lamar has been somebody people are looking at who did not have really that good of a season with Monaco, and people like Adrien Rabiot. I mean, is that a potential mistake that Deschamps made here for whatever reason?
Potentially, but I still think that they've got enough in that squad.
Oh, certainly.
But that's not the question for me with Deschamps. It's not so much who he's left out. It's what is he going to do with what he's brought? I'll give you the lineup against the Republic of Ireland, which I found very interesting.
Uh-huh.
He's trying to find this balance. So he played a kind of a 4-3-3 with Steven Nzonzi at the base of that. Matuidi to the left, Tolisso to the right, Fekir, Giroud, and Mbappe up front. Now, I really like the way that Fekir linked with Mbappe. I really like Giroud being the focal point, but I loved Nzanzi at the base. And it begs the question, how is he fitting in? Now, Griezmann will start. And
I was going to say, where's his name in this?
Griezmann will start for me, but I like this system. But he's got to cram in names and find a system that works for France. And if you listen to the French media or read the French media, they don't believe he's found that yet. And it was a problem at Euro 2016. And one of the problems for Manchester United is also his problem. What to do with Paul Pogba? Yeah. I mean, you could see a base of Nzonzi and Kante with Pogba probably playing further up the field. But I don't even see that either. He, at the last European Championship, was much more deep lying. And I don't know, does that work?
Is Nzonzi going to start over Blaise Matuidi?
Well, he played with Matuidi the other day.
Okay.
But what formation is he going to go? Is he going to go 4-3-3? He's experimented with 4-2-2-2. Does 4-2-3-1 work better? There's so many questions here. I think people look at the roster and think, they're nailed on. Should they get out of this group? Absolutely. But we've seen this before. The last European Championship is the key to this one. Has he solved those issues? And I would say that he hasn't. Worse than that, this is a team capable of some bad results. They had bad results in qualifying against Luxembourg. How they were beaten by Sweden, I don't know, but they contrived to do it. I'm not sure about this manager and his ability to get the best out of what he's got. And I don't know what team he's going to pick for the first game. And I think that's a problem.
Well, before we're too hard on them, it's a team coming off a runner-up performance at their last major tournament. Now, it was on their home soil.
How did they manage to lose that? When you look back at it.
I know, but we'll always remember it for them losing. But in the grand scheme of things, if you finish runner-up at a major tournament, I would tend to look at your squad and say that's a good team. So I don't want to...
Again, I'm not talking about team. I'm talking about the roles in which the players play, what positions they're going to be in, what formation is this team going to be.
So for them to go on a run, is that kind of your answer?
That is my answer.
He's got to find the right... Yeah, see, you're right. I don't know if they go... The idea of Giroud alone up top...
You don't like it?
Not really.
Well, there's going to be someone in behind him, but...
I'm assuming Griezmann would be that, and then I wonder if Mbappe would be out on the left, and Ousmane Dembele maybe on the right.
Okay, and then who are you playing back further down the field?
See, I would maybe rather Mbappe and Giroud be up together, and then Griezmann kind of just in behind them.
Well, you give Mbappe a floating role then.
Yes.
Playing off
I think I would.
Of Giroud.
But you're right, I don't know.
Look, at times, even this, we'll call it a B team that France put out, although I don't think it's that far away from what he might end up doing against Ireland. They were scintillating. When they get in a rhythm of passing and moving, they're unstoppable.
Mbappe's an interesting one because he's so young. And I know they have so many superstars, but it does feel like a lot of this is going to fall on him. I mean, the season that he's coming off with PSG and the price tag that he's valued at, 13 goals and 8 assists and 24 starts in the league, 4 goals and 3 assists in 8 Champions League appearances. I mean, he's 19, but I feel like he's ready to kind of shoulder the load almost up front. I don't know. Olivier Giroud is just kind of a weird one to me. I don't want to go so far as to say he's a country over club guy that we talk about sometimes, but Arsenal, he was more of a glorified sub. He was more than just a guy you brought in off the bench, but he had become a sub with them. Chelsea, you know, he became their first team striker, but that wasn't necessarily a nailed-on role for him. And now we're talking about France, which is just like the best of the best, and he's just... It's automatic that Olivier Giroud is their starting striker? It's weird to me.
I'm just saying, with a front line with so much movement from people like Mbappe, as you said, Ousmane Dembele or Fekir, whoever you put in there, right? With all that movement, to have a focal point, someone that's going to be in the box, is going to get on the end of moves consistently, I just think Giroud fits that bill. I'm okay with him being a focal point. Do you know what? If anything, it just gives this whole thing a structure, a spine.
What is their undoing to you? Like, if this all goes horribly wrong, I'm looking at it right now. I have Bovada up in front of me, and France are fourth favorites, which I almost feel like is harsh to them. I might have had them even higher than that. Maybe only one place higher than that. They have Spain third. I might have just swapped France and Spain. But I guess, you know what? Yeah, flip a coin. It's not a big deal. But, like, if that... That's if you're fourth favorites at a World Cup, that means people believe that you can win this thing. So if it goes terribly wrong, if they don't get out of the group, if they lose in the round of 16, I mean, what is the weak spot here?
Well, it's just as I've laid out, they won't have a kind of an identity. They won't have a format to the way they should play. I'm not fully convinced about the centre back. So if they don't have that screen there, which they should have, they'll, you know, Laurent Koscielny, he's not everybody's cup of tea, but he's an experienced head that won't be there.
And you're right.
And I think that could be important.
But he would not have started. He's not going to start over Varane or Umtiti. Now, it's funny.
Yeah, but
I'm arguing against myself because that actually was one of my answers here. The injured players. I talked about Dimitri Payet. You know, his creativity, his free kick ability. I think he might have been their best player. Him and Griezmann, I thought. Well, maybe not even Griezmann. Remember, he was taken out of the starting lineup.
He didn't start against
16.
Yeah, I know, but that's my point.
So Payet was probably their best player. They won't have him.
Griezmann comes on and scores in the game that he was dropped for. Let's not forget that. Scores late to get the win.
I only worry about Koscielny not being there if Varane and Umtiti are going to be the starters, but if one of them gets hurt, if one of them gets into some kind of card accumulation or red card situation, you're right, then the drop-off to their next center half is significant.
Just to have someone even around the camp like that. But my main point has already been made. I don't know if this manager knows his best team, and that will be the undoing.
Mm, that's profound. What about X factors? You mentioned a name earlier that I feel like we need to spend a little more time on, and that's Paul Pogba. To me, he is the X factor because I don't know where his confidence is at. Maybe leaving Manchester United the reins that Jose Mourinho has on him and going to this side where maybe Deschamps will play him more in the role that he feels he's best suited
for.
But
you know that's not true either.
I don't know what to believe anymore.
Yeah, but you know, what were we saying at the European Championships as well? Paul Pogba. You know, should we not be getting more out of him? Should he not be in a more advanced role? Why is he so deep? I'm not saying he can't flourish in France, but has the manager put together the framework for him to do that?
Yeah.
And you're right, he can be an X factor, but I don't know what's going to happen.
I think we also need to mention, in terms of X factors, the fullback situation with Benjamin Mendy and Djibril Sidibe, both coming off of serious injuries, both basically just returning to action, and both, I assume, going to be, like, we're talking about a lot of positions that we don't necessarily know. I think we do know what the back four will be. We mentioned the center halves, and I think it's going to be Sidibe and Mendy as the fullbacks.
Right. No, I think it is too.
Is that asking a lot of two guys who have been hurt for a large portion of the season?
Yeah, it definitely is. And also, formationally, Andrew, if you've got players who are going to drift into wide positions, I'm not saying that they are, surplus to requirements going in attack. But if you don't have the width or the space for those guys to get up, and we know how good Mendy can be going forward, I just worry about the formation that allows them to do their best work offensively as well as defensively. And we, have they enough minutes in the legs? We'll see.
France are one of two teams that have a Real Madrid and Barcelona centre-half pairing. Can you name the other?
No, go on.
Come on, you're not even going to try.
No, just tell me. Oh, it's probably. Do you know what?
No.
It's probably Spain, isn't it?
Yeah, Ramos and Piqué.
Oh,
come on.
What a wonderful question that was.
Look at you. The way you punted on it immediately, it wasn't even supposed to be difficult.
The reason
you don't want to try anymore.
The reason I punted is I thought there'd be some obscure players that Andrew's going
to
pull out.
No, I
did not know that.
I was trying to make it easy.
Come on,
jeez. You don't like my trivia questions.
No, I don't, because they're usually to catch me out. Anyway, look.
You can ask me one anytime you want. I'm an open book. People know I don't know anything about this anyway, so I got nothing to lose.
I'll tell you who doesn't know anything about it. Didier Deschamps. That's the problem. Sorry to go all French media on it.
Before we leave France here, they're a fun side. They're among the sides that I'm most excited about watching at this tournament. Just be a total fan for a second.
Right.
Take out, who's your favorite player on this team?
Antoine Griezmann.
Is it?
Oh,
that might have been my answer, too.
Everything he does is just, it's wonderful. His ability, look at his finishes in the Europa League final. Go back against Arsenal. I remember his moments, the things that he does, even outside of goals. He's isolated in the corner flag against Arsenal. And then in the away leg, and executes this absolutely perfect turn to skin two Arsenal players and remain with the ball. He's a total footballer.
Yeah, great player. I guess Hugo Lloris actually would be my answer. Captaining this side.
I believe he'll be dropped from Mandanda.
Okay. So that is our look at France, one of the favorites of this tournament.
And can I just put them in a bracket? When we talked about Spain, they fall into the same bracket. They are so loaded with talent that you expect them to do so much that you're almost looking for where the problems are. And I just think theirs might be the manager.
I still say Spain has the better midfield.
I think Spain has the midfield that knows how it's going to play. Yeah. That's how I would say that.
There you go. We move on now from France, who are the favorites of this group, to probably the side that are least expected to get out of this group. They had a hell of a time in qualifying, and that is Australia. And we come into Australia with the band 5 Seconds of Summer. This is their song, Youngblood. Number one on the Australian music charts. Youngblood, they want me, they want me. I've heard one yet that I don't like.
That's awful.
Oh.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
Really?
Wow. Huh. It's so bad it could win the Eurovision Song Contest, which Australia
you
are in for some
that
reason.
Song that
that
much.
Is shocking.
Shocking?
Shockingly bad. It doesn't know what it is. It's all over the place. Kind of like this Australian theme.
I had a Silverchair album growing up.
Yeah, you know what? We should have just gone with our favorite songs.
No, nope, these are the rules.
Silverchair. What was your favorite Silverchair song?
Oh, man. Oh, they had, what was there like? They had one.
They had a huge hit here.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that called? Oh, man, it was massive. They didn't really break the chart here outside of that song.
Right.
But they had like a cult following. Yeah, they were good. They were so good, I don't remember the song.
I can't believe I can't remember
I'm
going to
look
song.
It up
why
right
I bought
now.
The album. All right, well, while you look it up, I'm going to get into the start here for Australia. I don't know. It's a side I always enjoy because I feel like they're never going to be tops in talent. I almost feel like some of them...
They're a bit like us.
I was going to say they kind of mirror the U.S. a little bit in certain ways. You know, they tend to be a gritty side, maybe that outperforms the sum of their parts sometimes at some of these tournaments. Now, that did not happen last time around in the World Cup where they lost all three matches. But let's talk about this time around. Key players. I will start here. And it's probably one of the names that a lot of listeners to this podcast will be familiar with, and that is Aaron Moy of Huddersfield. I don't know necessarily where he's going to be deployed by Bert van Marwijk on the side. Who also, let's mention the manager, who qualified Saudi Arabia for this tournament, as we mentioned in the previous podcast when we previewed them, then resigned or didn't have his contract renewed with Saudi Arabia. And then, of course, Ange Postecoglou leaving after he qualified Australia. Van Marwijk comes in and takes over. Kind of a strange managerial situation. Still don't know exactly why Postecoglou left his post.
No, to take a job in the Japanese Premier League.
After he qualifies them for a World Cup. Yeah. He thought he'd see it through. But here we are, and it's Van Marwijk who is in charge. But yeah, Aaron Moy is the one that I'm going with. Because I enjoyed him at Huddersfield Town. I think he's good in the midfield. I think Australia will kind of need a stabilizing force there. But I don't know if he's going to be deployed in more of an attacking role or a defensive-minded one. I don't think I know that yet.
And I don't think the manager knows that yet either, because he's still shuffling his pack. I've gone with Jamie McLaren of Hibs, who was not in the original squad, for the original preliminary squad. But he's had a very fine end to his season. And if you look up at their kind of their front line, they don't have a ton of options there, including, we know in the past few years, as age has forced him to become not the midfielder he was, but rather turn into a centre forward. 38-year-old Tim Cahill is still knocking around the squad and is expected to go. Now, they haven't cut their squad down yet,
no,
which kind of makes it difficult. But Jamie McLaren's finish to the season is big. Also worth mentioning, Matthew Lecky, Hertha Berlin, who can play, I think, wide on the left and wide on the right. He could be someone that could help them out. But Andrew, it's thin.
It's thin.
Yeah, let's be honest.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, it kind of usually is, but we've always had Tim Cahill to sort of rely on, even though at the last World Cup he was 34. Now he's 38. It does look like they're going to bring him, which I guess makes him my X factor, because I don't know. He's not tied to a club right now. You wonder with Australia and their decision to bring Tim Cahill, if they do, it's not official what their squad will be yet, but it seems like it's headed in that direction. Is this just them clinging to like a name of glorious past, or do they?
Now, he did contribute goals in one of the games for the important goals.
Pretty important, two important goals in their playoff against Syria.
Right. I think.
But he did, in terms of domestically, he did nothing for Melbourne City and Millwall. Like, really nothing.
Yeah. Here's the thing. They may be forced, if Tommy Juric's injury is as bad as they think it might be, they're not sure, so there's a question mark there, then Cahill is definitely going. I think he's definitely going anyway.
I think he is.
Their paucity of options up front. And by the way, folks, don't think of Tim Cahill at the 2006 or the 2014 World Cup. Don't think about that. He is now a centre forward because he really doesn't have the legs for a midfield position. And also the fact that Jamie McLaren was left out of the original squad, you know, makes me think that Cahill is going come hell or high water.
Well, I don't know. And I don't think McLaren can know that just yet either, because the impression that I've been under is that McLaren, he thought his World Cup dream was dashed.
He went on holidays.
Yeah, he thought it was over. And then I think that the injury to a guy that you mentioned, in Tommy Juric, his recovery to this knee injury has maybe been slower than they thought. And so McLaren was brought back in. And now, obviously, they want Juric to be there, a striker from FC Luzern in the Swiss League. It's a race against time. Van Marwijk has until June 3rd, so we're getting close now. And I don't know. I don't know who's the guy that should be more nervous. If you think it's going to come down to McLaren or Cahill, then if Juric can't in fact go, I think Cahill's going. And McLaren would be the one that I think they brought him back in just as kind of in case.
I think that's a mistake if it happens. But we have yet to see.
To bring Cahill?
Over McLaren, yeah. But I'll get to that.
Okay. By the way, another player, I'll ask the question. Now, I don't have an answer for this, which kind of tips my hat as to how I believe this is going to go for them. But if they're going to go on a run and get out of this group, how do you see it happening?
Well, Matt Ryan, the goalkeeper, said to the newspapers the other day that they're trying to set up themselves to be scrappy for these friendly games like Atletico Madrid. They'll look to be compact because he doesn't feel that they're going to have a lot of the ball. And maybe, and this is maybe, if they can frustrate France in their first game, maybe they have a shot at doing something in the group. But I just don't feel it. I don't feel it. It's not in my gut. I don't see it on paper. It would be remarkable. That could be, that has the potential to be a tetchy 2-0 victory for France or an absolute blowout.
I think it's also a really hard group. So it was always going to be difficult for them.
And they made such heavy weather of getting there in the first place that you just wonder where they're at.
Yeah, captain of this side, Mile Jednak, of course. Premier League fans will be familiar with him, although now Championship fans, well, as he is with Aston Villa, who are not coming back to the Premier League. But, you know, he will have to provide some leadership for this side. He'll have to be stout in that midfield role, that's for sure. Of everybody on this team, aside from Cahill, he's the cap leader with 75 of them. So I don't know. I don't have, I guess also mentioned Tom Rogic of Celtic. So they do have some guys with some skill, but I don't know.
It feels like it will take a monumental effort for them to stay in games. I mean, stay in games, not dominate, not win a game here, but just simply to stay in certain matches. Can I give you my X factor?
Yeah, of course.
If anyone gets a chance, because they've heard us talking about Jamie McLaren, look up his hat trick for Hibs against Rangers. And you'll see he's very mobile, he's nippy, he's kind of everything that even, he seems more mobile even than Juric, and he's certainly more mobile than Cahill, if they choose to bring
You're
him.
You're going all in on a guy that I don't think he's going to be there.
I think it's crazy if they don't bring him. Honestly, they have nothing up there. And you know what they're going to need? For the amount of possession that they're not going to have, they're going to need an out ball, they're going to need a ball over the top, someone who's going to run into the channels, and he could do it. He certainly seems like a player that could do it.
Okay. Did you ever find the Silverchair song that's been driving me crazy?
Tomorrow?
Oh, yes. I believe that's it.
I think it's tomorrow.
Well, there you go. That's Australia. We move on now, and we head to Peru. Now, I should say, before I play the song, I had a hell of a time finding what is currently the number one song in Peru.
You were sweating.
So instead, I found a list that was called the Intro to Peruvian Music in 12 Songs that are still popular in the country. So I just picked one of them, and this is a very nice song. It's called La Flor de la Canela by Chabuca Granda.
Las vines en el pelo y rosas en la cara. Ay, rosa caminaba, la flor de la canela. Derramaba lisura y a su paso dejaba aromas de mistura.
We head to Peru. They have really been the side heading into this World Cup that somewhat surprisingly has grabbed a lot of headlines. I don't know if you would have expected that from one of the smaller nations competing in this tournament, one that hasn't been in this tournament in a really long time, 36 years?
82.
Yeah. And they're grabbing headlines for, I guess you'd have to say, the wrong reason. And we'll start with that, and that's kind of going to be some of the bulk of what we discuss here with this side.
It's kind of a big deal.
A lot of their World Cup hopes, maybe even their hopes of getting out of this group, have been revolving around the fate of their captain, Paulo Guerrero. For those who don't know, he was suspended. He is currently suspended for this World Cup after testing positive for, I guess, what you would have to consider trace amounts of cocaine. But there is more to it than that. Now, I'm going to run through this, so bear with me for a sec. Here's his situation. I'll start with what's happened most recently. He flew to FIFA headquarters to make a direct appeal to Gianni Infantino, which was rejected. He then appealed to the Swiss courts to try to have this ban overturned. That, I believe, is still being processed.
That is his last hope, and it's currently pending. Now, because the Court of Arbitration for Sport is based in Lausanne in Switzerland, and therefore that court has to be answerable to someone. It's usually just answerable to itself, so the Swiss court is his last avenue.
Now, here's why there's a lot of gray area here. This is not just a simple drug suspension. You're suspended, you appeal it, you have your appeal rejected. We've seen it a million times here in American sports, whether it be for steroids or drugs or whatever. But let's get into some of the minutiae of this. He tested positive for this after apparently drinking what he called coca tea, which he says is very common in Peru. Now, no one else on the team tested positive for it, but nevertheless, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not a common drink that could have just innocently occurred.
He was at a hotel, in one hotel in particular, and asked for this. And he's pretty angry that Peru keep using that hotel. But anyway.
So here's where it continues to get a little murky. His original ban when he tested positive was for a year. I believe this was back in October of 2017. The ban was then reduced to 6 months, which would have made him eligible just in time for the World Cup. But then WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, stepped in and requested that the punishment be reversed and extended from the 6 month ban that he was now serving to 2 years. So then the Court of Arbitration for Sport, as you mentioned, came back with the decision to make the ban 14 months after hearing WADA's appeal to extend it. Here's my question that I've had a hard time grappling with. What exactly does the World Anti-Doping Agency have to do with this? Don't they deal with performance-enhancing drugs? This is not, to the best of my understanding, a performance-enhancing drug.
No, it's not. The Court of Arbitration for Sport in Lausanne have accepted that this the trace element of the cocaine most likely came from drinking tea brewed in a receptacle which had previously been used to prepare coca leaf tea, a common drink in Peru. So it got mixed up. It was not taken on purpose. Guerrero then does not qualify for having taken drugs, but he had not attempted to enhance his performance. And the other measure that they take is, as athletes, you're supposed to be responsible for what goes into your body. CAS ruled that he had not shown a serious lack of care. CAS accept all of those things. I don't understand why WADA have come in to make this worse.
This feels really, really harsh to me.
It feels very, very wrong.
And to the point where the captains of the three other teams in this group, Lloris, Jednak, and the, for Denmark, is escaping me. Was it It wasn't Ericsson. No. Well, we'll get back to it when we get to Denmark. But they have all signed off on a letter appealing on behalf of Guerrero to have the ban overturned and actually have him be able to participate in this World Cup, which seems like an extraordinary measure for his direct competitors to take.
Yeah, and Infantino says he can do nothing, which I'm presuming that they're bound by the rules of WADA, that he genuinely can't do anything, or it would set probably a dangerous precedent. But here's the thing. If the Court of Arbitration for Sport accept that it wasn't taken to enhance performance, it wasn't taken because of any significant lack of care, like, those are two important criteria. What I don't get why WADA want to push this. I also don't understand why cannabis, ecstasy and heroin are all on the WADA banned lists and they're not performance enhancing. This just seems crazy and very unfair. And so today I tried to search for the reasons why those quote unquote recreational drugs are on that banned substance list for athletes. Mm-hmm. And apparently, I had difficulty finding this, but I did find an article that said that the US, when WADA was being established, pushed for those drugs to become on it because we were fighting our own war on drugs, which, in this country, and that we wanted a strict line to be taken on it because it would in some way aid that effort to trying to eradicate the scourge of recreational drugs in this country. That's the only reason I could come up with. And even that sounds a little flimsy.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I'm kind of rooting for him in this situation. I find myself just feeling really bad for him. He's the leader of this side. He's their captain. He's 34 years old. This is probably going to be his last shot. And for this to be the reason that submarines him, never mind everything that he's been through with his own club side, where he's been suspended for this as well. I mean, this is obviously what he's been pushing for to try to get back to participate in. And I don't know. I don't know how this is going to turn out, but the clock is ticking, and I don't know that I have a good feeling about it for him.
No, I don't think so either. He's 33 goals in 87 games for his country, so he's absolutely vital. And the early part of his career when he was in Europe, in Germany, was hampered by injuries. So this is kind of like an Indian summer part to his career. He's so crucial to his country. Like you said, at 34, do you honestly see... like, even if just like for club football, Andrew, if he's another, what would it be, so many months out of the game, how is he going to get back playing at 35, 36?
Yeah.
It's terrible. I don't know what else to say except you can tell the unfairness by the fact that other captains of nations that Peru are going to face have lobbied for their best player, their talismanic figure, to be brought back.
Right.
That just goes to show you that there's a cognizance within football that this rule could affect anybody at any moment, and it's not fair. And we've seen it affect players in the Premier League as well. I think it was a Hull City player at one point was when they were in the Premier League, he was found with drugs and got a ban. Recreational drugs.
Yeah. And the manager for Peru, Ricardo Goretzka, has had the right tone in all of this, and he's basically said that, you know, they'd like him to be there, but they are going to push forward and they believe in this squad that they're going to be taken to the World Cup no matter what. And the country has really rallied behind the team. It seems like enthusiasm, just from watching some of the videos online about Peru, enthusiasm is just through the roof for the side, with or without him. I think the boost that they would get if he was to return would be massive, but there's obviously a ton of excitement in a soccer-mad country hasn't been there in decades.
They had a national holiday for qualification, and I can guarantee you if they get out of this group, there'll be a national holiday for that too. It gives a chance to Jefferson Farfan, who
yes.
seems to have been around forever from Lokomotiv Moscow. And I actually caught the highlights of Peru played Scotland in Lima last night, I believe, and won 2-0. And Christian Cueva of Sao Paulo, Andrew, looks like a really lively footballer and somebody who could cause serious damage to some opponents in this group. So they have got other players. But I think it was Tim Vickery I was reading said that Guerrero's ability to hold the ball up is second to none, to bring other players into play. And like I said, when I was kind of alluding to with Giroud as well, that focal point in attack, that makes such a difference to a team. if they don't have him, it's really unfair. Yeah.
Now, moving on to the elements of the side that will be there, I was reading something from Luis Miguel Echegaray of Sports Illustrated, who knows a lot more about this Peruvian side than I do. And what he talks about in terms of what will be a major advantage for them is that Ricardo Gurecha is not locking himself into a certain style. He is a guy who is conforming to what the opponents are going to do. And what's cited in this article is that Peru clamped down on Modric and Rakitic when Peru played Croatia, and Peru won 2-0. They went with a certain style in that game. And then they go against Iceland. They change their style. They make more of a concerted effort to minimize Iceland's long ball. And Peru wins that game 3-1. So kind of polar opposite styles in two different games, and they still find a way to win each of those. They actually haven't lost since playing Brazil in 2016. That's 12 matches unbeaten, 8 wins, 4 draws.
And they had a terrible start to CONMEBOL qualification. And for them to bounce back and go on the run that they did, like, such a long time when you think about it. 2016, they haven't been beaten. Incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So I guess they'd be somebody, people ask us all the time about dark horses. You know, they come in good form. Whether or not they have Guerrero there, that doesn't change the fact that they've been playing really well without him. So, you know, they could be somebody. I wouldn't necessarily rule them out in terms of getting out of this group, but it's not going to be easy. Do you have any more on Peru?
Not really, except that one thing that struck me from the game against Scotland was, and I know Scotland made a lot of, Alex McLeish made a lot of debuts for Scotland last night, but one thing that struck me was their physicality, Andrew, and their ability to attack, their attacking verve. Like, they are capable of being very defensive minded if they need to be, but they can also get forward in waves. And like I said, Christian Cueva really, really impressed me.
So there you go. That's our look at Peru. We move on now to the final side in this group. It is Denmark. We come in with their top song. This is from top40charts.com. It's number one. It's Kessie. And the name of the song is Come Over. Been to 4 World Cups before this. They've reached the knockout stage in 3 of them. So a pretty successful side once they find their way into a World Cup. What do you think? Key players. I mean, look, I'll start, and it's obvious. It's not breaking any new ground here. It's Christian Eriksen. I mean, he is going to be the engine that makes this side go. He's coming off just a phenomenal season, I thought, for Spurs. A lot of people thought he was their player of the season this year. And this it's nothing new. He's been tremendous for them the last few seasons, especially under Pochettino. But he's replicated that form with Denmark. 11 goals over the course of Denmark's 8-game unbeaten streak. And unfortunately for you, you got a major taste of it when Denmark faced Ireland in the playoff.
Yeah, absolutely. He's my key player. We gave him a ton of space in the second leg, Andrew, and to say he ran riot is being kind. He was unmarkable. He was unplayable. And look, I'll get into that game specifically a little bit later on my views on Denmark. But Christian Eriksen, creativity wise, they don't have another player like him in the same mold whatsoever. And I'm not saying this is a one man team, because I don't believe that to be the case. They've got some other solid players, but he is so far above the mean for this Danish team. And a lot's going to go through him. And if there's a team that wants to stop Denmark, they have to stop him.
Yeah, I think he's actually a more complete player than people are even willing to give him credit for. Sometimes people just say, oh, Christian Eriksen, he plays in a great free kick. You know, he's a great passer.
He's brilliant on the ball.
He's an excellent finisher as well.
Yeah.
And I think Denmark, you know, maybe for Tottenham, it hasn't been something that he's been called upon to do because of Harry Kane and Dele Alli and even Son. But I think for Denmark, he is called upon to do that, and we've seen it firsthand.
Well, I think they lack a really deadly out-and-out striker for this team. And so he has to pop up and chip in with his fair share of goals, and he really has in qualifying.
Yeah. For them to go on a run, you know, like I just mentioned, 4 World Cups, they've reached the groups or the knockout stage in 3 of them. To make that 4 out of 5, I mean, what are you looking at for them?
They have Peru in their first game, and like, that is really one of the major battles, I guess, for that second spot is between themselves and Peru. And I keep saying it, but they have to get off to a good start there. They can't be beaten in that game if they want to go on a run.
Yeah, I was looking a little more specifically here at their central defense, which I think really is going to have to be strong because it is a group, like you say, with Peru, even without Guerrero, with France. There's some good attack forces in this group, and I think Denmark's central defense is a potential strong spot for them. And if that proves to be true between Andreas Christensen of Chelsea, Simon Schär of Sevilla in central defense. Schär was actually in Ligue 1's team of the season back in 2014 with Lille, and he hasn't slowed down since then. He's probably one of the more underrated players in this group. So if that can be the strength that it appears to be on paper, Denmark, they're not, I guess it just keeps coming back to the idea that they're not just a one-man team with Christian Eriksen.
Mm.
Oh. You think they are?
No, and I'll point that out in my X Factor.
Well, go ahead.
Would you want me to do?
Yeah, get in there.
All right. Pione Sisto, Celta Vigo, only 4 goals this season in La Liga, but 10 assists. He was brilliant against Ireland. Excellent. And he's skillful, he's quick, and he gives Denmark another option rather than going through a more central position to create attacks, right? Now, that's my X Factor. The rest of the team, I feel, is fairly pedestrian and fairly ordinary.
Okay.
You're looking at centre midfielders like Thomas Delaney. Look, a fine footballer. A footballer with Champions League experience under his belt. But basic enough. I think what I'm trying to say is, and I'll get to the obvious question, what could be their undoing? Aside from Christian Eriksen, aside from Sisto, I don't think they're that good. Why did they hammer Ireland? I think Ireland completely got their formation wrong. They gave way too much space to Eriksen and literally ran riot. I mean, Martin O'Neill put 2 wingers in central midfield for the second half. Don't forget, the first leg was 0-0 in Copenhagen. I don't think they're that good. I think outside of Sisto and Eriksen, they're very ordinary. I mentioned the strikers before. Look at who they're looking at for that striker position. I mean, Nicholas Bentner might still be in this team.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Look, again, I think you're selling their central defense short. I mean, I named a couple pretty good players at that position, which is a really important position. By the way, their goalkeeper is Kasper Schmeichel. I mean, there are other good players on this team. But look, I don't want to completely counteract what you're saying because by and large, I sort of agree. My undoing for them is kind of what you're saying. Who's going to score the goals? Like if opposing defenses are clamping down on Eriksen, Nicholas Bentner is a name that still gets mentioned. First of all, we don't know what his deal is. And I don't even know that he would have been a lock to start, but he got injured playing for Rosenborg in the Norwegian league last Sunday, which is a really, much like what we saw in the Champions League, it's a really ill-timed injury for a guy who probably would have been expecting to be on this roster. So there's no word yet on what his status will be. It's kind of a race against time. But beyond him, Nikolai Jorgensen of Feyenoord, he'll be called upon, I'm sure, to come up big. 10 goals in 26 appearances this season. Not terrible playing for them.
He's not prolific enough, I don't think.
All right. And Andreas Cornelius, big 25-year-old for Atalanta in Serie A, but just 3 goals this season and relative little action for them. And now he might be thrust into the spotlight. So, Eriksen's going to have to perform. Jorgensen may have to pitch in attack. You're right. Like, I do see where you're coming from. I don't know if I'm quite as down on the rest of the team in the way that you are. I'm almost a little bit surprised by it.
I wouldn't want to not mention Kasper Dahlberg, who's probably eased off a little bit from the season he had last season, particularly in Europe for Ajax. But he's an option there up front. You're telling me he's in the preliminary squad, right?
He is. They've trimmed their list down to 27 men right now, so he is in that preliminary squad. But they got to get it down, obviously, a few more. And it's not known right now. He's 20 years old. Not that that necessarily matters. There's guys younger than him that are going to be in this World Cup. Only 4 caps. I don't know.
I don't want to be too down on them, but they did not impress me that much, even in beating Ireland over the 2 legs. I think Ireland shot themselves in the foot as much as anything.
All right, there you go. So that's our look at the teams. Are you ready to give us one of my favorite parts of this podcast? And that is where we spin this wheel that I have here that I've dusted off. It's got the 4 sides from this group on it. And then you give us the blast from the past for whatever team it lands on. You ready?
Yes.
Oh, and it's Australia.
The Socceroos. I had to go with this one then. It'll be Tim Cahill's volley from Brazil against the Netherlands.
Here comes Tim Cahill.
One of our favorites, John Champion on the call. What an incredible goal that was. It was right after the Netherlands. It was right after Van Persie's
Robin had scored.
Oh, and then Van Persie had that wild header later. Was that a different game?
The header was the opening game against Spain. The long ball over the top, right, where he leapt like a salmon. It was a good diagonal pass, don't get me wrong, but he hit it first time on the volley, flew into the net. And the crowd erupted, yep. But that was pretty much as good as it got for them.
That is our blast from the past for Group C. Real quick, my prediction for this group, I'm going France, Denmark getting in that number two spot over Peru, and Australia rounding it out.
I'm going to go with France and Peru, one and two. That's
there
how
you
I
go.
See it.
Very interesting. This group, the Paulo Guerrero thing is probably of the most interest to me right now out of this group. Obviously, France is going to grab all the headlines, but I'm just so curious at how that's going to play out. And if I had known if Guerrero was going to be on the side, maybe that would have changed my thinking, although I'm a little more up on Denmark than you are. Obviously, if you guys have thoughts, as always, at CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, the groups, they continue. We've got Group D that you should see out probably a day or so from now, and a good one as well.
This was fun, except for Guerrero. I feel that actually that
cast a very dark shadow.
It makes me sad, yeah. And that's kind of why I want Peru to prevail.
Well, there you go. I like it. Hey, this was fun, my friend. To you, I say.
Take you later, fun boy.
See you later.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.